Today we count off 13 reasons to use or not use topiramate in psychiatry. Welcome to the Carlite Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlite Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and a dedicated reader of every issue.
Bruce Marianoff wasn't looking for an anticonvulsant when he stumbled upon topiramate. Working out of McNeil Laboratories in 1979, the 32-year-old chemist was assigned to develop a medication for type 2 diabetes. His plan was to find a synthetic sugar that the liver would mistake for fructose. Like a monkey wrench thrown into the factory gears, this fructose lookalike would get pulled into the gluconeogenesis pathway and halt the production of glucose at a critical rate-limiting step. The result for the diabetic patient would be lower glucose levels and better glycemic control. So Dr. Marianoff set about creating synthetic sugars, and one of them was topiramate. Yes, topiramate is actually a carbohydrate sugar molecule. But Dr. Marianoff saw something else in the molecule. It resembled acetonolamide, a medication used to treat seizures. So he sent it off for testing in an animal model of epilepsy, and indeed, topiramate calmed the seizures. 15 years later, McNeil delivered a tractor trailer half full of documents to the FDA headquarters in Washington, D.C. to seek approval for topiramate in epilepsy. That approval came in 1996 and was followed in 2004 by a second approval for the prevention of migraines, followed again by a third approval in 2012 for weight loss, this time as a combo pill with the amphetamine-like phentermine called Quesemia.
Over the years, topiramate has inched its way into psychiatry, and in this podcast, we'll detail all of the off-label ways it's been explored in our field. All 13 of them. But first, to emphasize, topiramate is not a first-line treatment in psychiatry and is rarely useful on its own. In most of the research we'll discuss, it was used as an add-on med when other therapies didn't work all the way. And most of the studies supporting its use in psychiatric patients are on the small side, so we usually don't turn to it unless the patient has more than one disorder that might benefit from it. And here are those disorders. Weight loss, bulimia, binge eating disorder, alcohol use disorders, cocaine use disorders, methamphetamine abuse, compulsive gambling, borderline personality disorder, major depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Soon after topiramate's launch in epilepsy, reports of an intriguing side effect came in. Patients were losing weight on the drug and had better glycemic control on it. No one has been able to pin down the mechanism behind this effect. About a dozen possibilities have been proposed. But it seems to be a combination of appetite loss and metabolic changes. Topiramate does lower appetite, but people lose weight on it even when their caloric intake is unchanged. And hearkening back to its original development as an anti-diabetic agent, topiramate does lower glucose and lipid levels and improves insulin sensitivity. Although the phentermine-topiramate combo pill called Quesemia is FDA-approved for weight loss, we recommend sticking with pure topiramate in psychiatric populations. Phentermine is a controlled substance with amphetamine-like properties, so it has cardiac risks as well as the potential to cause psychosis and mania. The FDA has recognized the need to curtail its prescription and requires clinicians to register for a REMS program before prescribing this combo pill, Quesemia. On balance, however, we do concede that the weight loss on Quesemia is meaningful, averaging 32 pounds after a year on the highest dose, which is about double what we see in studies of weight loss on topiramate. Well, you don't have to feel bad about going off-label here. By itself, Topiramate does have pretty good data in obesity. 10 randomized controlled trials where patients lost on average 12 pounds, or 5.5 kilograms, on topiramate. One thing unique about these studies is that, unlike most other weight loss medications, the weight loss with topiramate continues beyond 6 months. Patients can expect to keep losing weight on it for up to a year, which is how far out these studies go. Topiramate also has another 4 controlled trials for weight loss on atypical antipsychotics, which is a bit less than the dozen or so supporting metformin in this use. But topiramate does work there, and the effect is meaningful. It possibly causes even more weight loss than metformin did, according to a recent meta-analysis. And topiramate also caused more weight loss, even when used on its own, than the FDA-approved orlistat. Still, we'd recommend metformin first line for weight loss on antipsychotics because it has a lot more data, and it also has good data supporting its metabolic benefits more so than topiramate does. A good target dose for topiramate in weight loss is around 100 milligrams a day. Higher doses have been studied up to 200 milligrams a day, but around there the side effects tend to outweigh the benefits.
Topiramate also causes weight loss in bulimia and binge eating disorders, but more importantly, it seems to reduce the binge eating behaviors. If you use topiramate in one of these disorders, you can expect the number of binge eating episodes to go down by about 5 per week, but a placebo will bring them down by 3 a week, so the true medication effect is only 2 episodes per week. Altogether, this data is fairly sound, involving a total of 5 trials of 656 patients, about a third of which involved bulimia nervosa. Some of the most robust support for topiramate's off-label use is in alcohol use disorders, and those controlled trials total 8, and 3 of them are large, leading one recent review paper to recommend it first-line in alcohol use disorders. It's sometimes said that topiramate is particularly effective in binge drinking, but it has evidenced in all kinds of populations, from heavy drinkers to moderate drinkers, from reducing alcohol use to preventing relapse into alcoholism, and in patients with important comorbidities like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, PTSD, and head injury. It reduces cravings, impulsivity, responses to alcohol triggers, improves mood during sobriety, and also lowers the common tendency to use nicotine along with alcohol. The dose range from 75 to 300 milligrams per day. A lot of research is pouring into identified genetic predictors of medication response and addictions, and there is some indication that patients with a GRIK1 gene respond better to topiramate, but this is mixed.
Topiramate takes a step down when it comes to evidence in cocaine use disorders, but then again, there are less options to choose from here than there are for alcoholism, so it still serves a useful role. The dose in these studies is similar to the dose for alcoholism, around 100 to 200 milligrams a day, usually divided twice a day. So topiramate has been tested in 5 small, randomized controlled trials of cocaine use, but it only worked in 2 of them. One of the negative trials might be explained away by the fact that the patients had very poor adherence to topiramate. But even if we throw that one out, the glass is still going to be half empty here, or half full. Also, on the negative side are 2 additional studies of cocaine abuse combined with either an opioid or alcohol use disorder where topiramate failed to make a breakthrough. But on the positive side, there are 2 trials where topiramate did reduce cocaine use when it was given as a combo therapy with Adderall XR, up to 60 milligrams a day of that Adderall. Which leaves us wondering, was it the Adderall or the topiramate that worked there? We don't know. The story of stimulants and cocaine use disorders is quite intriguing, but inconclusive. Adderall did work on its own, but only in patients with comorbid ADHD and cocaine use. That was a single large study that also used a large dose of Adderall, 60 to 80 milligrams a day. In contrast, methylphenidate failed to reduce cocaine use in two studies, and modafinil worked in one study but not in some others. You may not be comfortable giving amphetamines to patients with a history of cocaine abuse, so perhaps this intervention is best reserved for the addictionologists who are set up to monitor treatment with urine drug screens and make sure that these patients are enrolled in a psychotherapy program along with the medication. I should mention that in nearly all of these addiction studies, including the alcohol ones, topiramate was used as part of a counseling program. And in weight loss, it is only FDA approved for obesity as an adjunct to weight loss counseling. There is, however, reason to think that topiramate may make Adderall a little less risky in patients who have cocaine abuse. How is that so? Well, in one placebo-controlled trial of 62 patients with methamphetamine abuse, topiramate reduced all measures of abuse with a significant effect.
Some psychiatrists think that topiramate has anti-impulsive effects across the board. We certainly see some support for that in binge eating and addictions. And in 2013, Eric Hollander's group from Mount Sinai added compulsive gambling to that list. The study was very small, and the results meager. Topiramate reduced impulsivity in compulsive gamblers, and not much else. But was followed up in 2017 by another small controlled trial from Spain, where topiramate reduced gambling behaviors when used along with a therapy program. Topiramate also has case studies in kleptomania, sexual compulsivity, and excessive hair pulling, trichotillomania. One place where we see a lot of impulsivity is in borderline personality disorder. Here we counted three controlled trials of topiramate, all using the usual dose of 100 to 200 milligrams a day. All were small, and all came from the same group led by Marius Nickel in Germany. These studies looked at reductions of aggression and anger, which topiramate achieved. The benefits held up when they followed up on the patients a year and a half later. Nickel showed a similar anti-aggressive effect in women with depression, where topiramate reduced anger and depression. So topiramate might be useful in borderline patients with high aggression, but what about broader symptoms in borderline personality disorder? There we have one small controlled trial, again from Nichols, where it proved useful in a long list of symptoms. I'll read them here, as they give us a good sense of the multitude of problems that people with borderline personality suffer from. Somatization, interpersonal sensitivity, anxiety, hostility, phobic anxiety, and being overly autocratic, competitive, introverted, and expressive in their relationships.
Anticonvulsants are often used in borderline personality disorder, but in major depression, not so much. So it's remarkable that Nichols found that topiramate worked by itself as monotherapy, not just for anger in that study, but for depression in women with major depressive disorder. That study was replicated by an independent group who tested topiramate in a small randomized placebo-controlled trial in major depression, this time with men and women. In this study, they used topiramate to augment an SSRI in patients who had failed to respond to that SSRI. The Hamilton Depression Rating Scale improved with the topiramate at 100 to 200 milligrams a day. The effect size was in the moderate to large range. We calculated it at 0.4 to 1.0 with the confidence interval built in there. And that improvement was not just because associated symptoms like anxiety, agitation, and insomnia improved, although indeed they did, but actual depressed mood itself improved on topiramate as well. I'm on the fence about these depression studies, though. I've used a lot of topiramate in practice, and I've not noticed any antidepressant effects. But this could just be my own observer bias, as I tend to think of topiramate as anti-impulsive rather than antidepressive. Also, I've had a few patients call me back with marked depression and dysphoria on it, which might bias me. Come to think of it, I've seen that kind of reaction with most anticonvulsants, even gabapentin, although it's rare. Anticonvulsants have complex neuropsychological effects. Most of them have a warning about suicidality on them. So warn your patients when you use them that there's a small chance they may feel mentally worse on them and to call you if they do. That kind of preemptive support makes a big difference. Now, with so many options for depression out there, most of them better studied than this one, it's unlikely that you're going to turn to topiramate on the basis of these two small trials. But this research does at least open our eyes to the possibility that topiramate might help depression. So the next time your patient starts topiramate for a more established use like migraines, weight loss, or alcoholism, watch to see if their mood improves. As Louis Pasteur said in 1854, where observation is concerned, chance favors the prepared mind. One place where I have seen benefits with topiramate is in OCD, and here there are four randomized placebo-controlled trials that tested it in OCD based on the theory that topiramate's glutamatergic actions would be useful there. As usual, most of these are small studies, each enrolling about 30 to 50 patients, with a dose that ranged from 50 to 400 milligrams a day, much higher than usual. Three of the studies were positive, and one was negative. All of them used topiramate to augment SSRIs in OCD, except for one study, which is notably one of very few controlled trials of any treatment in OCD with bipolar disorder. And in that one, they augmented lithium and an atypical antipsychotic with the topiramate to treat the OCD because they didn't want to muddy the waters with an antidepressant that could cause rapid cycling. If you've noticed a lot of OCD in your bipolar patients, then you're not just seeing things. The rate of this comorbidity is high, with 1 in 6 bipolar patients having OCD, and there's also evidence of a common familial transmission for both of the disorders. And if you haven't noticed it, start screening for it. OCD is one of those silent disorders that can take years to detect. Patients often keep the symptoms secret and don't complain of it unless you ask. I remember one patient where I had worked with her for 3 years before figuring out that she had OCD. And when I shared this revelation, she looked at me like I was dense and said, "Didn't you know that? Why do you think I always ask you if you want your door open or closed when I leave your office? I mean, don't you think I would know by the umpteenth time which way you like it? But my OCD makes me keep asking." Yeah, sometimes we all miss obvious signs.
The final place where topiramate may have some psychiatric utility is in PTSD. That is the subject of our cover story in this month's Carlat Report, where we go over some strong reasons to use it, and equally strong reasons not to use it, and settle on a place where it's worth considering in PTSD. But we won't spoil the surprise. Check it out online. Now let's do a head count. We found some ready-for-prime-time support for topiramate in four disorders. 1. Weight loss. 2. Bulimia. 3. Binge eating disorder. 4. Alcohol use disorders. Then there's preliminary. Use it as a last resort or if your patient has a bunch of these comorbidities together. Support in 7 disorders. 5. Cocaine use disorders. 6. Methamphetamine abuse. 7. Compulsive gambling. 8. Borderline personality disorder. 9. Major depression. 10. Obsessive compulsive disorder. 11. Post-traumatic stress disorder. That's 11 uses. It's also FDA approved for prevention of migraines, which are common in psychiatric patients, so that could bring us to 12. But what is the unlucky 13th use? Epilepsy?
No, number 13 is bipolar disorder. A lot of anticonvulsants were released in the 1990s, and they promised to improve on the tolerability of this class. Gabapentin, oxcarbazepine, levetiracetam, lamotrigine, and topiramate. The thinking back then was that any anticonvulsant would work in bipolar because carbamazepine and valproate had. And there were lots of uncontrolled trials and case reports coming out suggesting that these new anticonvulsants would work as well. Unfortunately, many of us got caught up on that bandwagon before the large controlled trials came in, and when they did, one by one, this new generation of anticonvulsants failed, with the exception of lamotrigine, which failed in mania but not in depression. In the case of topiramate, topiramate worked no better than placebo in large studies of both bipolar mania and depression, where it was tested as monotherapy in over 1,600 patients, as well as adjunct to other mood stabilizers. It failed across the board. It also failed in a controlled trial of schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. The same could be said of gabapentin and oxcarbazepine, both of which were pursued in bipolar mania in large industry-funded trials, and both of which failed. Many of these studies are unpublished. In the case of levotiracetam, Keppra, we're not aware of any large industry-sponsored trials, but that one did fail in a small controlled trial of bipolar depression and another small controlled trial of bipolar mania. Bottom line, don't go using topiramate in bipolar disorder as a mood stabilizer, but you can use it for one of these adjunctive reasons.
And finally, a word on tolerability. Topiramate, Topamax, is well known to cause cognitive problems, a side effect that earned it the nickname Dopamax. We found this improves a lot by starting low, 25 milligrams a day, and titrating gradually by 25 milligrams per week, which is actually how they recommend it in the PDR. But it can still be serious, and even lead to traffic accidents. Second, it sometimes has the opposite of the intended effect. There are case reports of mania on it, of worsened OCD, and as Dr. Aiken pointed out, of suicidality and depression. When patients tolerate it, they tolerate it really well and appreciate the weight loss. But when they don't, it's usually bad enough to make them stop the med, dizziness, GI distress, fatigue, and coordination problems. These problems are real hit and miss. In some of the studies we reviewed today, the dropouts were similar to placebo. But in a few of them, topiramate side effects caused so many patients to drop out that the results were uninterpretable.
Topiramate has three main medical risks: renal stones, loss of vision, and metabolic disturbances like elevated ammonia. All of these are rare, and here's how to minimize them. If your patient has a history of renal stones, glaucoma, or other eye disease, avoid topiramate or get approval from their doctor. Topiramate's ocular side effects are many, from blepharospasm to retinal hemorrhage to glaucoma. So think twice if your patient is seeing an ophthalmologist for anything other than eyeglasses. To reduce the risk of elevated ammonia, avoid prescribing topiramate with valproate, Depakote, which can also raise ammonia levels.
And now for the word of the day, blepharospasm.
Blepharospasm. You just heard it in the long list of topiramate side effects. It means excessive involuntary eye blinking. You need to know about it because it can look like tardive dyskinesia, but it's not. Besides being a rare side effect of topiramate, Blepharospasm is seen in the tics of Tourette's disorder, in Parkinson's disease, or it can occur on its own, usually when there's a genetic risk. Patients with blepharospasm should be told to reduce caffeine use and avoid insomnia, both of which can make it worse.
Join us next week for an update on how the novel coronavirus affects the brain. And follow us on Twitter for daily research updates. Today's tweet is on a new type of psychotherapy for depression that is based on the ancient moral code of the Greek philosophers. Check out the full articles and earn CME credits at thecarlattereport.com and get $30 off your first year subscription with the promo code PODCAST. That helps us stay free of industry influence, something we've been in the habit of doing since 2003.